The Orange FM.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I am one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with a man who can quote Article 57 of the Shadow Proclamation by heart, Adam Farmer.
If only that was the case. I think that would take my cred and just shoot it through the roof if I could seriously quote the Article 57 of the Shadow Proclamation by heart.
Do you know what it is?
Yes, I do, because there's this amazing thing called Google.
Yeah, that's not what we're talking about today. Shadow Proclamation is not what we're talking about today, because this is an episode that we have much more important things to discuss.
Absolutely. So we have a lot more important things to discuss outside of the Shadow Proclamation. I mean, we are just coming off of one of the, I'll say one of the biggest events when it comes to Doctor Who fandom outside of the 50th anniversary that we had the privilege to watch.
So other than the 50 or other than the Christmas special, which I know you watched.
Yes.
Other than that, have you been up to any Doctor Who stuff recently?
Well, I did watch, kind of going along with the Christmas special, I did watch The Farewell to Matt Smith, which, that I did not expect to walk away from that episode or that show with as much. I was bought into Matt Smith after watching that, which is kind of funny because I just finished the way I did it. I watched the Christmas special. I watched the Christmas special again. And then I followed my second watching of the Christmas special with Farewell to Matt Smith. And after watching that, I was really sad that Matt Smith was done. They did a really good job putting that together. So I watched that episode. But outside of that, it was really nothing more that I watched other than I did get one of those vinyl figures that I talked about last time. So I opened up my stocking this year for Christmas and I pulled out a box that I swore was a coffee mug. And when I opened it up, nope, there was the 10th Doctor staring me in the face. So pretty excited about that. And then I consider this part of my Doctor Who fandom as well. I got a pair of Converse tennis shoes that look very similar to what the 10th would wear. So call me a little bit silly. That is what I'm claiming as my Doctor Who fandom for the last 2 weeks.
So now you just need the pinstripe suit and then you can start cosplaying with me.
As soon as I can find a decent pinstripe suit that looks just close enough, I'll probably bust it out. I still need to grab a Sonic though. I don't think my outfit would be complete without Sonic and a pair of 3D glasses.
Yeah, I think the Sonic would be the cheap part. The suit might get a little expensive.
Yeah, I've seen some suits out there that would fit the bill because they're the authentic 10th Doctor costume, but they're a little bit pricey. They definitely know what they're doing there. How about yourself? What else? What have you been up to? Have you been tearing through some older episodes as well? Have you been watching anything in specific?
Well, like I said last episode, we have a visitor in our household who has been staying with us for the past couple weeks, and she has been working her way through Doctor Who. So I've kind of been just, you know, right along with her watching these older episodes. So we kind of started doing that. I watched The Impossible Planet, Satan Pit, Love and Monsters, the episode that we were making fun of last time.
I was wondering if you guys were going to watch that one or not.
Fear Her, which now I'm going back, I think that's only the second time I've ever watched it, and that goes down on my list as one of the worst episodes of Doctor Who ever.
You're going to have to bring me up to speed. Fear Her, what is...
Fear Her was the episode where there was this little girl that was
Yes, I despise that episode. The London 2012 Olympics, is that right?
Yep. Yep, the Olympics was a big part of it. Her body had been taken over, possessed by an alien entity, and she was able to draw a picture of something, and then it would like take that and put it onto, I don't know. It like trapped him in
yes.
some kind of, yeah, it was weird. And the little girl had this really creepy voice.
And then there was the monster in the closet reference, correct? There
yeah.
was something in her closet and it had something to do with her dad. And it was a really weird episode.
Yeah, that one was bad. Really bad. Didn't like that one at all. Army of Ghosts and Doomsday, which was interesting because that's Rose's first goodbye.
Okay.
Kind of sad.
Army
she...
of Ghosts, is that the invisible Cybermen?
Yes, and then that all leads to the alternate reality version of Mickey coming back.
Yes.
Or I guess not. No, it's actual Mickey coming back from the alternate reality with the other, you know, other members of his party there. And then the doctor, you know, sends Rose off to the alternate reality basically to save her, to keep her safe. And it was kind of sad because she didn't know that he was going to do that.
Okay.
So
yeah.
She, you know, she's crying on the one side of the wall.
Oh, yes.
On the other side of the wall. Yeah. So yeah. It was kind of sad, but those were important episodes to watch, I think, trying to catch my friend up because we quickly realized she wasn't going to be able to watch every episode of Doctor Who before the Christmas special. And so I started just kind of skipping episodes to make sure that we watched some of the key episodes.
Nice.
You know, we watched The Runaway Bride so she could find out who Donna was.
Which, if you were watching closely in the Christmas special, I believe there was a reference to The Runaway Bride, but continue on.
And then, of course, we watch Blink, which is one of those that everybody recommends. If you're going to watch one episode of Doctor Who, you have to watch Blink.
Which is surprisingly Dr. Absent.
Yes, true. Dr. Light, I think, is yes. The official term.
Exactly.
Rewatched The End of Time, watched The 11th Hour, which I love. It's one of my favorite Doctor Who episodes of all time. The Snowmen. We got the kind of the introduction to Clara, even though she had been introduced before. That was like the first kind of official introduction of her. Yeah. Then, of course, we watched The Name of the Doctor, The Day of the Doctor, you know, so she got completely caught up before we watched the Christmas special.
Wow, that's quite the run up to the Christmas special.
Yeah,
it's surprisingly, though, outside of The 11th Hour, The Snowman, The Name of the Doctor, and The Day of the Doctor, you are extremely light on Matt Smith.
Yeah, well, I think it was part of the just time aspect. We quickly realized that she wasn't going to be able to watch them all. So, and to be honest with you, Smith's run as the Doctor has had its issues for me. And I think that'll kind of come out when we talk about the Christmas special in a little bit. But there's not a lot of his episodes that I really love. And so
The Girl That Waited?
That's more old people. The old people makeup. Yeah, I have a big problem with that. So we'll talk about that more, but we won't get into it too much right now.
Okay.
But the other things I did Doctor Who related. Have you ever heard of the game Doctor Who Legacy? It's like a iPhone game.
I have heard of it, yes, but I haven't touched it.
Okay, so I came across that and decided to download it. Didn't realize it was free, and started playing that. It's kind of a fun little game.
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe you should download it, play it a little bit, and then maybe we can do like a review of it on one of our episodes.
Hey, I'm all for that. I can definitely download a game and play it.
Since now the Christmas special is over, we're going to be pretty light on Doctor Who material until next fall. So we need to find things to review. So why not review a video game?
Sure, why not? I'm sure there's, along with our watch through the classic Doctors, which I know will make quite a few of our listeners happy to revisit some of those memories, I think we can do a little bit of Doctor Who Legacy review.
It's kind of like, to just kind of give a quick explanation of it, it's almost like Bejeweled, except there's like a story element to it.
Nice.
And then you get to unlock cool stuff. So
awesome. I completely off the fact, but there's also on the iOS, there is a $1.99 Sonic Screwdriver app that I have always been so tempted to download. Maybe I'll have to download that as an excuse and review the Sonic Screwdriver app as well.
So does it actually open doors for you?
It doesn't work on wood, though. So that's the one downside. No, but it has sound effects and all sorts of wonderful things. And it's officially BBC licensed.
Cool. Well, and then lastly, the Eighth Doctor audio. I've kind of run into a wall on that, to be honest with you. I got to the one I was telling you about last time, just to show you how little progress I've made with it.
Minuet in Hell?
Yeah, Minuet in Hell. It started out interesting, and then it just got really weird. And
nice.
Yeah, it has some interesting content in it. So yeah, that's kind of the first one that I've come up against that I'm just not really enjoying it and not really wanting to listen to more of it. But I'll work my way through it eventually. But for now, I'm kind of stalled on the Eighth Doctor audio.
Okay.
But yeah, gotcha. But that's about it. But before we get into our full-on Christmas special review where me and you are going to fight.
Ring the bell and go at it.
Before we get into that, we did have a question. Last episode, we had asked our listeners if anyone had a question, they could ask us while we were recording our episode. They could ask us on Facebook or Twitter. And we had a question come in literally as we were stopping recording. So I promised this person that we would answer his question.
Awesome.
This episode. And it actually works pretty well considering the subject matter of our episode is heavily Matt Smith. His question was, and his name is Jason Hunt, a fellow podcaster friend of mine. He actually has a podcast called The Wampa's Lair, if anybody's interested in Star Wars. He has a podcast that he does with his friend Carl LeClaire. So if you guys want to check out a Star Wars-related podcast, go check out The Wampa's Lair. There you go, Jason. I plugged your podcast. But his question basically was, what are some of your favorite Matt Smith moments from Doctor Who? So I will start because it looks like I have – oh, no, it looks like we have about the same amount. But I'll go first, I guess. I'm going to go with a real easy one and kind of the very beginning of Matt Smith's tenure as a Doctor. One of my favorite episodes of all time, if not my favorite episode of Doctor Who, is The 11th Hour. I love – yes. How the Doctor is introduced in that storyline, how he meets Amy, and just kind of how it all. I love Rory as a character. I think it's such a great starting point for him because of the progress that character makes, and so just so many elements of the 11th Hour I really enjoy. But my favorite scene and my favorite Matt Smith moment from that episode, and one of my favorite Matt Smith moments across all episodes is at the very end of the episode where he goes up to the roof. And you have the giant eyeball alien that's hovering there, and he goes up there and basically scolds the alien, like, what are you thinking? You know, attacking this planet. This planet is protected. And just as he's kind of picking out his new outfit, you know, he's telling them, you know, I'm the Doctor.
Oi, I didn't say you could go. Article 57 of the Shadow Proclamation. This is a fully established level 5 planet.
And you were going to burn it? What? Did you think no one was watching? You lot. Back here, now. Okay. Now I've done it.
Did he just bring them back? Did he just save the world from aliens and then bring all the aliens back again?
And I think that's the you got to extend that moment just a little bit further. Not only when he's on the roof, but you nailed it right there. As he's walking through the hospital and he's grabbing random bits of clothing as he's walking through the locker room. And then as he bursts out and he if I'm remembering correctly, he said after it goes through all the faces of who the doctors were, saying I am the Doctor, and then it shows him in his full costume. Yes, that is definitely superior Dr. Smith moment.
He's finishing like his bow tie right as he's walking through, I think, something like that. But yeah. And I like how he's kind of, as he's trying stuff on, he's throwing, you know, different pieces of clothing that he doesn't approve of backwards, and it's like hitting Rory and Amy in the face.
Yes.
As he's giving this speech. But yeah, that's one of those moments that sticks out in my mind as the best Matt Smith moments out there.
Yeah. And I'm gonna just jump in here because one of my favorite moments is kind of even earlier in the episode. Because like you mentioned, that is by far one of the better, if not best, Matt Smith episodes. He just came on so strong, which was amazing because after seeing Tennant leave, we definitely all were hoping for someone like Matt Smith to take over. At least I was. And earlier in the episode, when he's first meeting Amelia Pond, and the whole fish sticks and custard moment, the happy face on the apple, the whole statement of you're Scottish fry something. I just loved that part of that episode. So just throwing that out there, I would say that the 11th Hour definitely one of those awesome moments, but there's a lot of great moments throughout that. And one of my favorites would be the very start of the episode as we're first getting introduced to who Matt Smith is.
So your favorite part was the beginning of the episode. My favorite part was the end of the episode. And it actually, I think, is very telling in the type of things that both me and you differ in that we like about Smith. Whereas you kind of, you know, you enjoyed the goofiness at the beginning of that episode where he's kind of throwing the food around and, you know, kind of getting to know his taste buds and stuff. And that was the part of Matt Smith that I didn't like as much. You know, that whole opening of that episode, I kind of was, you know, I thought it was kind of cute, but I was kind of rolling my eyes at the same time.
Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head there. I think that is kind of telling because as we get into the Christmas special, I think that's going to become even more obvious. But continue. What are some of your other favorite moments of Matt Smith?
Another one of my favorite episodes from Matt Smith is Vincent and the Doctor. I love that episode. And so the moment where he actually brings Vincent Van Gogh to the gallery to kind of see how people appreciated his work, just the emotion of that moment, I thought was great. And I really enjoy if a television show can bring any sort of emotion out of me, if it's laughter, if it's sadness, whatever. And that moment, if Doctor Who is one of those moments that kind of is a little bit of a tearjerker for me, you kind of get a little misty-eyed, you know?
Yeah.
So that, you know, when a show can do that, they're doing something right. And so that moment is definitely one of my favorite Matt Smith moments.
That's one of those moments of Matt Smith that you have to go back to. That is one of the first episodes that my wife actually sat through because it's just such a well-made episode. Even despite the invisible monster that's chasing them around the entire time, having Van Gogh and Smith, it very well made. So I would agree that, especially at the end there when he brings him up to the gallery and has the guy giving tours basically tell Van Gogh who Van Gogh was. A very, very awesome moment.
What's another one for you?
I've already mentioned that one of my favorite companions is Craig from The Lodger, but I'm going to go basically to probably the entire episode of The Lodger. And this is where you can call me out again for saying, or for liking those goofy aspects of the Doctor, but because that entire episode is by far just goofy and I loved it, loved every second of it. When Amy is explaining to the Doctor what football is, what soccer is to those Americans, residing in the U.S., what soccer is. And just kind of understanding what it is and then going out on the field and not having a clue what he's doing, but yet he just is amazing at whatever he's doing. I loved that entire episode. And then you go to the, I can't even remember the name of the episode, but this next time that he's with Craig and just his interactions with the baby and how just utterly goofy that is. I would say those were some of my favorite moments when it comes to Matt Smith. But once again, you can call me out because those are the goofy moments. These are Matt Smith.
These aren't Matt Smith moments. These are Craig moments that you're enjoying.
No, they're Matt Smith moments. I don't know. In those episodes, his interactions, his statements, his goofiness. Yeah, I was all about those episodes.
So fun fact about Matt Smith, I don't know if you might already know this, Adam, is that he actually did play soccer at a pretty high level and was wanting to pursue a career in that. But I think because of an injury or something, he wasn't able to and got into acting.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so that I always thought that was interesting. And it was kind of cool that he gets to kind of show off some of his skills in the show because he was actually pretty good.
Yeah. That's interesting tidbit by you. Good job.
But I'm gonna take another easy one here. This is probably another typical favorite moment across the board. If you ask anybody, we have to mention it, and that's the big speech in the episode, The Pandorica Opens.
Yep.
And I enjoy that one so much, so we actually use part of that in our opening for this episode or for this show.
How can you not? That's just an awesome moment.
Like he's like, I am talking. Yeah, that's one of the things I love about Smith's Doctor is just some of those moments where he gives these epic speeches.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's an easy one, but I'm taking it. The Pandorica Opens, definitely one of my favorite Matt Smith moments.
I will take your Pandora opens, and I will go with not a goofy moment, not a slapstick comedy moment, but a moment that I was reminded of while watching The Farewell to Matt Smith is Amy's final moment in the graveyard right after Rory, right after they think they've just escaped. And then Rory gets touched by the Weeping Angel and disappears back into the past. And Smith is standing there with Amy, and he is just pleading with her to just turn around and go with him. Just turn around and walk away and don't do this. And River actually has to jump in and tell him to stop. And yes, Amy, that's your only chance. I love that moment. It's just one of those times where you see the doctor and he's really at his last straw. And he actually has something to lose at that point. And he was so emotionally attached to Amy and what she meant to him, the first face that he saw. Yeah, I liked that moment. I was reminded of it by watching the Farewell special, and it's one that I actually wanted to go back and watch just a wee bit more before we jumped on this podcast.
Well, we could probably go on and on about different moments of Matt Smith that we like, but we'll each do one more, and then we'll get into the Christmas special. But
okay.
I'll go with a more goofy one for my last one. The scene in Let's Kill Hitler where River believes that she has killed him, and he shows back up, and he has a full-on tuxedo with top hat. And not only that, he also has a sonic cane. I just love that moment where he comes out, and he's just, you know, kind of arrogantly, you know, strutting around in this new outfit. And I think she says something in, like, "You were dying, and you took time to change?"
"You're dying? And you stopped to change?
Oh, you should always waste time when you don't have any. Time is not the boss of you. Rule 408.
And that's so Matt Smith. So that, yeah, I'll go out with a more lighthearted one. But yeah, that's one of the more memorable moments for me.
And for my last, I'm going to go with kind of a more broad concept. And it's going to be with Matt Smith in Rebel Flesh, Almost People, those two episodes, which I always loved when they did the two episode story arcs. But with the doppelgangers, the fake people, and where he has a doppelganger of himself, and he plays off himself. And once again, something that was referenced in the Farewell special to Matt Smith. But just seeing that interaction between with him playing off himself, not only is just a funny moment for the doctor where he's complimenting himself, but also I honestly think it does show just what was very special about Matt Smith. He was, like him, hate him, whatever you want to say about how he portrayed the doctor, he is amazing at what he does. You might not have liked what he did, but he was really, really good at what he did. And I think in those episodes, he really showed it off for himself.
Yeah, he's undoubtedly a very talented actor. And I'm very curious just to see what other things he does after Doctor Who. Unfortunately, I think a part like Doctor Who may typecast him, and you might not see him show up in other things as much as we'd like to. But I would love to just kind of see him branch off, you know, into other, you know, into feature films and things like that, and just see kind of the range of his acting, because, you know, he's definitely talented.
Yeah, I think we might be surprised. He was the US's first big doctor, I guess, is what BBC was trying to say. And who knows, he might have made a big enough splash that he starts showing up in Hollywood.
All right, well, let's go ahead and get into it. Since this episode is our Christmas special review episode, we've both watched it multiple times. I know you've seen it at least twice.
That's correct.
And I have as well. I watched it once. And I will say right off the top that I'm going to be probably the more negative one of this conversation. I did not like it the first time I watched it. And then upon a second viewing, I still didn't really like it that much, but I liked it a little bit better. I have my issues with it. I actually, when I went to work the next day, I talked my coworker's ear off, really ranted about how much I hated the episode. I think I've come down off of that now. I got it all out of my system. I wouldn't say I hated it, but there are definitely elements of it that really bothered me, things that I think they could have done better. So I'm going to be the negative side. I'll let Adam be the positive side. So we'll play a little good cop, bad cop here.
And
But
I'll definitely be the positive side of this conversation. I'm not going to off the top say that this was by far my favorite episode I've ever seen. And I know that it probably should have been. Everything that happened, it probably should have been made to be our favorite episode of Matt Smith moving forward. It wasn't. But on the flip side of it, I thought they did a really good job. We talked about how Stephen Moffat said that he was going to tie up all the loose ends. I wouldn't say that all the loose ends are tied up, but I would say that quite a few got tied up, and they might not be how I wanted them to be tied up, but he at least put forth a good effort. So I liked the episode. Definitely liked the episode. I would stick with you and say there were things about it that didn't quite see the point of, or wish they would have done slightly different, or maybe just left out altogether. But hey, it is what it is. And at the end of the day, I was thoroughly entertained. And at the very last moment, I almost had a tear come out of my eye. So
really?
it was a
Wow.
very good job.
I was nowhere close to tears the whole time. And I am known for being that kind of emotional person when I watch things. They can really, I mean, Lion King made me cry. So like, so the yeah, this one didn't even get close, but well, let's talk about it a little bit. I think part of the problem for me was and I had this fear before, we had talked about it in a previous episode, was just how good the 50th anniversary special was.
Right.
That I guess I was coming off such a high, and even the prequel episode of the 50th anniversary, the Night of the Doctor with the Eighth Doctor and them showing his regeneration, and that was so well done. And then the 50th anniversary was so well done. And I think I just had my hopes way too high for this. And then when it turned out to be just a very average episode, in my opinion, to me, I was very disappointed because the fact that it was Matt Smith's final episode, and I felt like it shouldn't have been an average episode. But yeah, so let's talk about it a little bit. Kind of just to start out, right at the very top of the episode, we have this idea of the Doctor, I guess, with his holographic clothes. Or that he was projecting the image of clothing right onto Clara's eye. Is that how it was working?
See, if we wanted to start off with one of the worst things about the episode, this is where we would start. I don't think we should start here though.
I'm only going to point out the bad stuff, Adam. You didn't realize that? No. We're,
we
okay, so
have
where should we
we
start, Adam?
we have
What?
to start where the episode started. If we're going to start anywhere, and we'll make it to the horrible holographic clothes and just the running gag that was, which was absolutely horrible. But I mean, the start of it where he is at the planet, and it is the shielded planet. I think that is the best place to start.
Okay, so we get Tasha Lem. Is that her name? Tasha Lem?
Yes, the papal mainframe.
Mother Superius. We get her
Mother
voiceover
Superius,
at the very
yes.
top of the episode. And we have this whole situation where there's this signal going out and it has drawn all of the Doctor's enemies to this planet. We get to, I'm trying to think of how it went.
Handles. He's
Handles.
walking around with handles,
Yeah, so we
which
get the Doctor.
let me know what you think about handles. I'm interested to know what you think about handles.
I liked Handles.
Okay.
Believe it or not, out of all the things about this episode I did not like, I liked Handles. I thought Handles was clever. I thought it was funny. I love how they have the moment where the Doctor tells him to remind him to reroute the phone through the console or whatever.
Yes.
And he starts to remind him right away, and then he's like, no, just pick a random moment. And then of course that comes back later on in the episode, right before Handles, spoiler, dies.
Yep.
And I was more emotional about Handles dying than the Doctor's
That
regeneration, but
is bad.
that is bad. Yeah, so I liked Handles. I thought he worked.
Cool. I liked handles too. And just the interaction there, which that answers the question that we asked last episode about why in the world is he carrying around the head of a Cyberman? Well, guess what? We now know it's actually a friend. His name is Handles, and he helped the doctor out for 300 years.
Yes.
But
the
yes.
The longest running companion, I think.
The longest companion in the in only one episode.
If you can count a severed head of a Cyberman as a companion, then he's the longest running companion, I believe.
Nice. So he's jumping from ship to ship. He's trying to figure out what's going on, and then he gets a phone call from Clara, Christmas dinner, and now we get to the holographic clothes. I just wanted to start with a high point.
Yes,
and now we can jump into the holographic clothes.
And I do agree with you. The beginning of the episode had me intrigued, and I liked Handles, and I liked what was happening, where he jumped from the Dalek ship, and he's carrying a Dalek eye stalk, and he's like, I come in peace, and then they see him. He obviously didn't know he was on a Dalek ship. And then he does the exact same thing, going to a Cyberman ship, holding a Cyberman severed head in his hand. I thought that stuff was hilarious. I mean, I'm not a hater of all things goofy that Doctor Who does. I think it can be done well. And up to this point, I was completely fine with the episode. And then the holographic close.
Yes. So we come to find out that, I guess, something about the papal mainframe, the ship of the security church run by Tasha Lem. For some reason, they like transparency, which means no clothes whatsoever. So that is where we find the doctor when Clara first meets him. And I think this is one of those parts that I would have just cut out altogether.
So what about the part where he goes to her family's house? Is that's another part I felt like they could have just left out and didn't really understand the purpose of it. How did you feel about them introducing us kind of more to her extended family? Did you think that had any value to this episode? Was it necessary?
Other than to show Clara's emotion throughout the episode, as she reappears with her family time and time again, I really don't see any point of having them there. And you could probably have accomplished the exact same thing by just having her there by herself. Probably even to a greater extent if she was by herself. So I don't understand really why. I thought maybe it was to draw stronger emotional ties if something should happen to Clara. But even then, they didn't really do a good job at that point either. So I have no idea.
It was a little bit of a needed plot point. If you have, the doctor kept kind of getting rid of Clara to keep her safe. He kept sending her off, and he needed somewhere to send her off to. So I guess establishing that as a place that they were having Christmas dinner, and then he, sent her back there a couple times, kind of made sense. I kind of wondered why he didn't just maybe, put her in the TARDIS, and then just block the door or something,
yeah,
as opposed to sending her away completely. But I guess maybe he wanted her to go on with her life, while he had to protect this town.
Right. We'll definitely discuss that. So, so he ends up making it to the planet. Well, first, they leave Clara's apartment, and he tells her about the whole holographic clothes, that she needs to swallow her own projector. And then they go to the papal mainframe, and they have that whole exchange with Tasha Lem, where, in fact, we find out that Tasha Lem is actually a friend, as opposed to the enemy that we thought she was going to be.
Yeah, we were way off on that one.
Yeah,
well, the trailer was definitely misleading, because they have a scene in the trailer where she's like got her projected face above that town and says something about, it was going to burn. And so then, of course, that makes her look like the villain. So yeah, their misdirect worked on us, because she ends up being an ally.
Right. I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I was convinced that she was going to be something other than a friend. In fact, I was almost sold on the fact that she was going to be a regeneration of the Master the more I looked into it.
Yeah,
I was convinced.
Once you mentioned that to me in the last episode, I started to think along those lines as well. And so I was as well convinced that she was going to be the Master. And because, as you had mentioned to me on iTunes, they actually bundled the Christmas special with the End of Time episodes.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, that's a tell. Like they're trying to remind us of the Master, because he's going to show up, or she's going to show up in this special. So that was I don't know if that was an intentional misdirect, But yeah, so that threw me off. I totally thought we were going to get an appearance of the Master.
Yeah, I was, for the exact same reasons that you mentioned, I thought, okay, they're giving me the End of Time Part 1 and Part 2 for this reason, to remind me, so that when it shows up in this episode, after, what was it, 2-3 seasons of never hearing of him again, I would now know who he was again. But yeah, so anyways.
And the 11th has never faced off against the Master.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be kind of
never, and he will never, right?
Yeah, right. So, well, they can always have him come back. But yeah, so I thought maybe that would be a good way to send him off, you know, have him face off against the one enemy that he has yet to face off against. But yep. Nope. Nope. We got all the same old enemies in a small town that doesn't really matter.
Hey. No. So what did you think of, since it's kind of the big part of where we are in the story, what did you think of the papal mainframe?
I liked it. I thought that part was cool. The Tasha Lem was a little odd. I could have done without all of her hitting on the doctor. I think that's been done too much. You know, it's kind of like these, you know, nobody can resist the doctor.
Right.
I could have done without that. Just have her be a regular character, you know, that's helping him out without that side of things. Other than that, though, I thought she was an interesting character. The papal mainframe, the idea that, you know, it's tied in with events that have happened in the past with the silence and, you know, silence will fall and how they tied all that stuff in. I thought that was great. You know, I liked that part of the storytelling.
Do you find yourselves wondering, or yourselves, all 10 of your regenerations, do you find yourself wondering where they have been this entire time? Like, why haven't they shown up at any other points in time where a planet needed protecting or something else was taking place?
I didn't really think about that. I mean, I guess an in-universe explanation to that could just be, you know, the galaxy is a, you know, or the universe is a very large place and they happen to be in other places. You know, they can't be everywhere at all times. So this is just happens to be the first time that we have seen them. You know, obviously the Doctor has had interaction with them before. So he's, you know, even though we weren't aware of them, you know, they've definitely been out there. So I didn't really think about that. No.
Okay. So we go from the papal mainframe, Doctor's there with Claire. They jump in the personal transporter. He gives up the TARDIS key, correct?
Yep. Which I didn't understand at all.
Okay. So he gives up the piece of technology, the TARDIS key. And then they drop to the planet and we're introduced to the first on-planet enemy, the Weeping Angels. So did you have any problem with the Weeping Angels showing up there? I was kind of disappointed in the way that they were used, but what did you think about the Weeping Angels showing up at that point?
I didn't like it. I didn't think they were necessary. I'm kind of the mind that if don't do something just to do it, I feel like there needs to be a reason why they were there. And I guess it was kind of just a way to have the Doctor face off against all of his major enemies all in the same episode. But I could have definitely done without the Weeping Angels the way they were used. I mean, it was just a completely pointless scene where they tried to make it seem like Clara was in danger, but we all knew she really wasn't. And they got away. And it just, to me, that they could have completely cut that scene and I wouldn't have missed it at all.
But the scene did set up for the Doctor taking off his hair,
which is something else I could have completely done without. There are things about this episode I like, I promise. But that, I just, why? I mean, I know he shaved his head for some role and they had to have him wear a wig throughout the episode. But unless you're going to have him shave his head and then have his hair short the rest of the episode or whatever, I'd be okay with that. But I don't know. Just to have a wig so he could hide a key, that just makes no sense to
me.
Well,
he got bored one evening, okay?
Yeah.
And he knew what was going to happen, and he had to get the TARDIS down there somewhere, some way. So they go from there. They get their TARDIS back, and then they end up in the town from Christmas where we basically spend the rest of the episode. And there was something about the town called Christmas that I'm thinking you probably think is another somewhat pointless aspect of it, and that was the truth field.
You know me too well. Either that or you read my notes.
All of the above.
Yes. Yes, I did, and that one, I just didn't understand why it was necessary. Like they introduced this idea of a truth field, which it made for a funny gag. The doctor, just kind of blurted out who he really was, saying that he was wearing a wig a couple times, It was a funny gag, but I thought they should have used that more throughout the episode. What was the purpose of introducing that element if you're not going to use it as part of the plot?
Well, and that's where I think we kind of get into what takes up the vast majority of the rest of the episode is because when he finds the crack in the basement of the church, and he mentions that the reason why, I mean, the truth field was coming from the crack. It was coming from the Time Lords. And the reason was is because they were asking that message that went out to everybody. It was the question of who the doctor was, and they wanted to make sure that the doctor was actually going to give a true answer. He couldn't lie about what his name really was. So I think it did have a point. Now, whether or not that point was actually a big deal, I don't know. But it was
But
he.
what were they thinking he was going to do? Just say a different name? Like, I don't understand, like, what's the purpose of having a truth field when all you have to do is just not tell them? So all he had to do was just not say his name, and the truth field has no purpose.
Right. Yeah, and that's something that I guess I was trying to think through too, as like why did they need to make sure that he would say the right name? Was there some power in his name that if he were to say the right name, something else would happen if he said the wrong name? I don't know. But the
I
doctor
almost.
does say it's the question only I can answer. The truth field is to make sure I'm not lying. The question only I can answer. And then he says that they're just trying to find a safe place to come through.
Yeah, I still don't. I don't get it.
Maybe, and this just hit me, and this might be completely off base, but maybe it wasn't a truth field to make sure that only the doctor could say it, but maybe it was a truth field to make sure that no one else was trying to come across as the doctor. So if someone else were to go to the crack and who for some reason or another knew what the doctor's name was, which now that I'm thinking about it is absolutely no one, but then they couldn't trick the Time Lords to come through.
River could have done it.
River could have done it, and we already know that she's kind of crazy in some episodes.
But okay, so let me so the Time Lords know his name, right? And they're just
Yes.
it's kind of like it's like a password. So they want to make sure
Right.
that whoever's on the other side, if they say the right name, then they know it's really the doctor. It's not like they want to know his name. They already know that, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I still don't get it.
Nice.
So, yeah, so the whole crack in the wall thing, tying back into the 11th hour, which is, has been stated that's one of my favorite episodes.
Right.
Interesting that that came back. I was okay with the reasoning behind it, that they, it's a crack in the universe and the Time Lords are trying to come back and, they found a weak point in the universe because now they're in another universe.
Right.
So they've found this. I thought it was a little soon. I thought it was a little early, considering that he just, sent the Time Lords off into this other universe in the last episode, in the 50th anniversary, to kind of already bring them back that fast, was a little too soon for me. I didn't expect that we would hear from the Time Lords again for a while.
Yeah, I didn't expect that we'd hear from the Time Lords this soon. But it kind of goes back to what we talked about before. I am convinced that from this point forward, Gallifrey, the Time Lords, they're going to have a major part to play moving forward. Now, I wasn't expecting them to be in another universe, which I guess I missed that somehow. I guess I missed the whole cup of soup analogy where there would be in a different universe. I thought it was a cup of soup in our universe, but I missed that at some point. But I'm convinced that moving forward, we're going to have more things like this show up where there will be a lot of references to Gallifrey or the Time Lords and what he's looking for. So, not really expecting to see it this soon, and really kind of surprised that they were in another universe. And even the doctor seemed kind of confused how it could be, even though at the end of the 50th, we kind of thought he knew that it was out there somewhere, but he seemed to be pretty convinced he was never going to see it again. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting aspect of the Christmas special to have the Time Lords already trying to find their way through.
Yeah, and they're very patient. You know that. Because they, well, I guess they're Time Lords, so I guess you don't really have to be patient. They could jump ahead 300 years. They didn't have to wait that whole time, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, so some of the issues I had with the episode was just some of these story devices. The thing, the reason why the Doctor, you know, why is the Doctor spending 300 years protecting this tiny little town that really doesn't matter? And when there, to me, there was other solutions. Like, okay, you have a TARDIS.
Well, and that's the one thing that we can't forget. He didn't. He didn't have the TARDIS for 300 years.
But he had it at the beginning.
He had it at the beginning until he sent Clara away.
But why did he send Clara away? To protect her.
From
this war that's coming.
Right.
Why not? You have this town that seems pretty small. It doesn't seem like it's that big of a town. Why not just say, okay, let's get everybody out of here and just pack them all onto the TARDIS and take them to a safe planet?
See, and part of me wonders if we're – so I'm going to get somewhat deep here, probably not as deep as I think I'm getting, so I apologize. But it's somewhat like he – I get the sense that the Doctor thought everything was determined. That he basically comes to Trenzalore when he finally finds out what planet this is. As soon as he hears that name, it's basically like he's resigned himself to the fact that this is where he's supposed to die, because he's already seen it at the name of the Doctor. He's already seen his end. In fact, he makes a few comments here and there that this, we already know that this is where it ends. I mean, we've seen the field of gravestones. We've seen the oversized blown out TARDIS. So I'm wondering if he's just kind of resigned himself that there's no way to change the future. This is the way it's going to end no matter what. And that's why he's kind of just stuck around the entire time.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I can buy that. I don't know. Just the whole idea of this tiny town and this war going on around it. It just, to me, the logical thing to do when you have women and children in danger is to get them out of that danger. You know, like move them to another town. Are you telling me right. The entire planet of Trenzalore only has one town? Like, you know, get them out of there. Get them away from that crack.
Right.
But the fact that he stays for 300 years and the town doesn't really ever seem to progress, you know, they're always kind of that same backwater town. You know, you would think over 300 years they would have maybe developed some technology. But yeah, it was just weird to me. The whole idea of that town, I really didn't like it. I could have used this same story told in a different way.
Yeah.
Without the surroundings of this town, I just felt like it was weird.
See, I can agree with you that it was kind of weird that it all goes down in a small town Christmas with, I mean, I swear at times they looked like they were wearing lederhosen. I don't know where this was, but it definitely has that Christmassy feel to it. I just found myself the entire time sitting back and just like watching this conflict take place, because he's there's the one character, Barnable, the little boy who he makes the pop gun for, tells him not to leave it out in the rain again. But when the TARDIS finally shows up and he gets in the TARDIS and he's with Clara, and then, or right before he gets in the TARDIS, he looks down and the boy's sitting by the TARDIS and he's like, "You're guarding my TARDIS." And the kid asked if he was going to leave and all this other stuff. And in the end, their last exchange, Barnable says, I will wait. I'll wait. Basically, I don't know. It's just, there's so many flashbacks, I guess, in my mind watching the episode between him and Amelia when it comes to Barnable, that is like, he ends up coming back because he's already had so many experiences where he left people waiting, or where he's left people, or where he feels like he's failed people, that he ends up coming back in the end. And that's where I think the episode actually was a huge highlight to me, because it kind of just highlights all these conflicts that he's had throughout his entire tenure as a Doctor. All the different little characters where he just wants everything to be okay, but he knows in the end, or at least he's convinced in the end, that this is where he dies and he can't do anything to change it.
Yeah, I didn't like Barnable.
Come on, how can you not like Barnable?
Just another pointless character. Like, there was no, I don't know. What was his purpose? I guess, like you said, maybe I was missing the point. Maybe he was meant to remind us of these things that the doctors had to go through.
I just can't look at Barnabas without hearing him say, "I'll wait." And then you see him sitting on the ground and he looks a heck of a lot like Amelia did sitting on her suitcase waiting for the doctor to come back. And then the fact that the doctor actually looks at his screen and sees him waiting is just one of those moments where it's like, I don't know, maybe I'm just projecting out of the doctor, but he couldn't just leave the little boy waiting there again like he did with Amelia so many years ago. He had to go back.
Okay. One thing we're skipping over here that I think is very important to my not liking this episode, and that is putting Matt Smith into old man makeup.
Oh, yes.
That, to me, maybe single-handedly ruined this episode for me. And I don't understand the logic behind it at all. I mean, other than the story, you know, they're trying to show that he, you know, dies of old age, I guess is what we're supposed to believe at the end.
Right.
You're taking like you're taking your star, your, you know, fresh faced young, the girl. There's so many girls that I know that watch this show because of Matt Smith, that love Matt Smith. And I was watching this episode. I happened to be watching this episode with a group of people who, you know, at least half of the people there were girls or women. And as soon as he shows up in the old man makeup, I swear every one of them went, "Ooh." And like, I just don't get the logic behind it. It's his final episode. I didn't want to see old man, you know, Doctor Who in his final hours or days or whatever. I wanted to see Matt Smith. You know, yeah. I wanted to see the actor Matt Smith portraying the Doctor in his final days. And to me, that wasn't what I got. I got Matt Smith in makeup, which really took away from it for me personally. And then It gets even worse because he ages even more at the end. And I've just never been a big fan of like putting actors into old people makeup. Like I just it takes me out of the, because it's so obvious to me that it's fake.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's not him. Like that's just Matt Smith with makeup on. Like that to me just really takes me out of it. And as soon as he showed up with makeup, I was like, ugh. Really? They're doing this? I didn't like it when they did it to Amy Pond, and I definitely didn't like it when they did it at the final episode of Matt Smith. If they did it as a random episode somewhere else in the story, I'm completely fine with that. But as his final episode, it made me angry.
I can say that it threw me off to see him, sounds odd, in his middle age, older years. Probably more so, not so much the makeup, but because of the gimpy leg. I didn't understand the hobble with the cane. But at the very end, I don't know. I think I had a problem with that middle stage, but I liked the ending where he was at his ultimate age, right up until the actual regeneration, which that's a completely different part of it. But I don't know. I was fine when I saw the doctor sitting in a chair, unable to pull the Christmas cracker paper. But yeah, I can definitely say that seeing him in his older years, but not oldest years, it kind of gave me pause. I was kind of confused by that. I'll agree on that one.
And so the 300 years that, you know, he ages up to this point, and then Clara was trying to get back into the TARDIS. So she gets caught in the TARDIS's field, I guess.
Yes.
I was kind of confused as to what happened there as well, because they show her and she looks like she's like basically frozen.
Right.
And her skin's all white and she's still got her hand with the key in the door. And I'm thinking to myself, did she just spend 300 years in like a time vortex? Like, oh my gosh, like this poor girl. And she comes out and she's like, he's angry at her and she's angry at him. And I'm like, yeah, she should be angry at him. And then they're just like, oh, everything's fine. No big deal. What did you think of that part? Did you think that she was actually there for that long, or was it just kind of because it was a time vortex that time passed differently and then she was only there for, you know, a few minutes?
I kind of took it at face value and said, okay, it's a time vortex. So for her, it was just a couple minutes and she was really, really cold. But for the doctor, it ended up being 300 years.
Okay.
That's kind of just how I accepted it. I can definitely say my first watch through, I kind of was a little taken back by that, where I had to think about it for a second before I allowed myself to get back into the episode. The second time I watched it, it didn't even cross my mind. It was just, okay, yeah, whatever. Let's move on.
Well, let's jump ahead a little bit so this episode doesn't last too long. Basically, to kind of fast forward, the Daleks have like a full-on attack. They are able to take over the what are they called again?
Papal mainframe.
The papal mainframe.
They infiltrate and they create more Dalek units, which we haven't seen since Clara's first episode.
Yes, the Asylum of the Daleks was the first time we see these human, you know, human hybrid Daleks. They have the eye stalk coming out of their forehead.
Yep.
Poor Tasha Lem, you know, that happens to her. She's able to fight it, but essentially the war starts. The Time Lords still haven't come through the crack or anything, but the Daleks find a way to kind of do a full-on assault of the planet. So we get the Doctor. He's really old, and he is going to die of old age, and it's his last regeneration. He gives us the whole explanation as to why it's his last regeneration and that he cannot regenerate anymore. So we are all to believe that he will die, and then that'll be it. And Clara is with him at this point. So we get the whole scene where the Doctor tells Clara that he wants her to stay where she's at. He's going to go up to the top of the tower and, you know, talk to the Daleks, and he's going to die.
Yep.
And then Clara decides to go over to the crack and talk to it. And basically...
Don't do this, Aaron. Just let me enjoy the episode. Don't do this to me.
I'm just explaining. I'm trying to fast forward here, so I'm getting the last of it here. But so she tells, you know, she basically goes down and talks to the Time Lords through the crack and tells them, you know, you got it all wrong. His real name is the Doctor, and you need to help him. You know, help him. I don't know if she says change the future. I think she might.
She does.
She says help him change the future.
Yeah.
So she asks them to, and as he is up on top of the tower, we get the scene where the crack closes after Clara pleads with it. Then it reopens up in the sky. And through this new opening up in the sky, we get some kind of thing comes through there and goes into the Doctor's mouth. And now he has a whole new set of regenerations. Did I get that all right?
Yeah, you got it.
So now we have an explanation as to how he can continue to regenerate, which I'm fine with.
Okay.
I'm cool with that. I'm not cool with, I guess, the Time Lords, what their reasoning behind it is, or maybe why they believed that they were actually talking to somebody that was with the Doctor, and why they were just willing to just kind of do that without any more evidence than they got.
Yeah.
They waited 300 years, maybe, or maybe not. Maybe they just jumped in a TARDIS and went forward in time. But, yeah, I just thought that was kind of convenient that they were just like, oh, okay, you're right. His name is the Doctor. Anyone could have said that.
Right. Yeah, that's...
I mean, seems like a big deal to me that you're going to give somebody a full-on, you know, 13 brand-new regenerations. You would think they would want a little bit more evidence than some girl that they've never met, you know, talking through a crack.
Yeah, and that's where even when we look back at the 50th anniversary episode, and it's like Clara intervenes at the most perfect moment to make sure that everything happens exactly how it should be, and that really without her nothing like this would ever happen. If you look at the individual details about the episode, and this is I think where I kind of draw the line. When you look at the individual details of the episode, kind of like this, where it's like Clara's appealing to the crack, and then all of a sudden the crack just happens to open up above the Doctor's head, like it knows where he's at, and then give him all this power, and then everything's hunky-dory from there. The individual details of the episode, really, that's where the episode wasn't strong. But I think the story overall was awesome, and this is definitely one of those points where it's like, yeah, I'm not too keen on that, but... Yeah, it's definitely a weird situation.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm used to giving Doctor Who a pass. You know, I've had my issues with Matt Smith's era of the Doctor and some of the things that they do. So some of the elements that were in the episode, it doesn't surprise me that I had a problem with it. I'm used to these type of things. I kind of like, okay, I can give that a pass, I can give that a pass. But I felt like I had to do that too much in this episode. Yeah, and then I guess the other thing that kind of confused me was if they realized the Doctor was there, wasn't the whole point that they wanted to come through the crack? So why didn't they come through the crack?
Right. Because Clara made such a convincing case in her speech. She just shocked them into reality of, oh my word, what have we been doing to this poor town of Christmas for the past 300 plus years?
But they don't know that that's where it's at. They don't know there's even people there.
I know. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, the whole logic behind that part, and because that's kind of the solution to how the doctor gets more regenerations, I was like, oh man, that's just such a cheat. Like, I just did not like that. And then of course, as he gets the regenerations, you know, it tops off where he's doing the whole regeneration energy coming out of his fingers and he's shooting planes out of the sky. And I was at that point, I just was like, this is not how he is regenerating. Please tell me this is not how he's regenerating. I hated that part.
And weren't you happy that that's not how he regenerated?
Old man in makeup, jerking around, like
his best Elvis impression.
Oh, I was like, are you serious? This should be I don't know. I feel like when the doctor is dying, which is essentially what was happening, it needs to be a little bit more solemn than that. And I guess Moffat warned us. He said the regeneration was going to be different this time. He wanted to remind people that Matt Smith was funny. But to me, that wasn't funny. It was dumb. It was just really dumb.
Yeah, I would say that if we were to – that was a rough part. Now, the couple things that I did like about that was where the Daleks are announcing the rules of regeneration are known. You have expended all of your lives. And he says, Daleks never tell me the rules. And then as the regeneration energy starts – He shouts out, we're breaking some serious science here. I thought that was a great line. If I were to look at any part of that entirely weird sequence, I would draw that out as being one of the good parts about that. But I'm right with you there. Like him spinning his arms and shooting it up into the air and then spinning his other arm and then the regeneration energy out of his head and neck up into the Dalek ship, which I guess it just disintegrates and no pieces fall anywhere. But it that part was definitely rough. Love from Gallifrey Boys when he shouts that. There were definitely some rough parts of that.
Yeah. And I will say that I was very happy to see that that wasn't actually the way he regenerated.
Exactly.
And it was almost like Moffat knew. It was like, okay, I'm going to have this scene, but there's going to be fans out there that hate it. So I'm going to have a second scene of him actually regenerating where it will be a little bit more serious and solemn and sad.
Yeah. See, the first one is kind of where the doctor regenerates, or at least where the regeneration process starts. The second time when we get in the TARDIS and you see the clothes kind of scattered and the fish sticks and custard. To me, that is more of the farewell to the doctor, or Matt Smith's farewell to the doctor. Like just some of the lines that he throws out during that sequence. The one where he says, we all change when you think about it. And then he says, I will never forget one line of this. Not one day. I will always remember when the doctor was me. That I just think like that's not the doctor regenerating. That's Matt Smith himself saying goodbye to his entire experiences with the doctor.
Yeah, I loved that line. I loved that part. That worked for me. And I think it kind of goes with the way that each of the doctors, 9, 10, and 11 now, have had kind of that going away line.
Yeah.
You know, where he says that Rose was fantastic, and then he says, oh, I was fantastic as well, or however he worded it.
Yeah.
And then you have, I don't want to go, which is a famous line from the 10th. And I think for the 11th, it's going to be that line. I will always remember when the doctor was me.
Yep.
And I think that was great. Well written. Perfect. That's the ending I wanted for Smith. And I wish there was more of that type of thing going on in the episode, as opposed to them just tacking it onto the end of a very goofy episode.
When we talk about you having a more negative perspective and me having a more positive perspective, I would say that definitely the details of the episode, kind of what you said, the elements that they used within the episode, definitely made it hard. It definitely made it hard to enjoy the overall experience. But I think there were enough pieces like that, at least for me, where it caused me to think back on other things that have happened before. be it the Barnabas, the Barnabas moment, be it just this tension between him not wanting to leave Transalore, thinking that Transalore is where everything went down, and then at the very end to have that I will always remember when the Doctor was me. That's where, I don't know, I guess those are the mountaintops of the episode, and I'm just kind of looking high and I'm not looking low on this one. It was good to have it end like that, especially with the reference to, or with even watching Amelia run around on the TARDIS and then having Amy walk down and say Raggedy Man goodnight. I don't know, even that was special to me, just to have everything tied up.
Yeah, the only thing, I really would have liked it better if there was some way, and I don't know how they would have worked it out, but that they could have actually had the real Amy there to say goodbye to him.
Yeah.
Because there's really, it's kind of like, okay, is that just in his head? Because obviously I don't think Clara was seeing it.
No, they made that perfectly clear.
Yeah.
That she wasn't really there.
Yeah, so it was kind of like, okay, it was nice that he got to say goodbye to her, but he really didn't get to say goodbye to her, other than just in his imagination.
Yeah.
So it would have been kind of cool to have some way that she was, you know, maybe the TARDIS brought her back or something just so she could say goodbye. And then as well, it's kind of a weird situation because you have Clara, who is also very important to the Doctor, but kind of cast aside in that moment.
Yeah.
Which was kind of sad, I thought.
She was there to give the lines as far as don't go, don't change. I don't know.
It would have been similar to if you had the Doctor saying goodbye to Rose and Martha was standing there. You know, it would kind of been the same idea. Like Martha would have been like, oh, wow, like I really mean nothing to him, do I, compared to this girl? I feel like Amy is the 11th Rose and Clara is not. And
Clara has always been more of an enigma, a paradox to the Doctor, someone that he wanted to follow, find out, try to figure out what's going on. But then towards the end, she became more of a caretaker than she was a companion. That's, if you want to go to a true companion, I would say the 11th's true companion was Amy. Clara was something else, and I'm really interested to see, because after Smith dropped the bow tie on the floor and he stands there 1 second longer, then his head snaps back, and then head snaps back forward, and it's Capaldi. I'm really interested to see what happens between Capaldi and Clara.
Yeah, and you would think, you know, if they stick to form, that Clara is going to be his, you know, companion, like his main, the one that means the most to him, because it seems like, you know, obviously with Rose being, you know, Tennant's first companion, and obviously the one that he meant the most to him, and now Amy meant the most to the 11th. So now that the 12th Doctor's very first companion is going to be Clara, maybe that's where she will kind of develop more of that personal relationship with him. And not that she didn't have a personal relationship with the 11th, but she never amounted to what Amy had.
Right.
So I think maybe Capaldi's, you know, Doctor will be more that to her.
Yeah. And brings us to the interesting question. What do you think of Capaldi?
Well, we didn't get very much with him. there was actually a point when the Doctor was regenerating on the tower, and I looked down to see how much time was left in the episode, and I saw there was like 10 or 15 minutes left. And I was like, oh my goodness, they're going to have him regenerate into Capaldi, and then we're going to get like 15 minutes of Capaldi being the Doctor. And I was really excited about that prospect, to kind of, instead of just getting a little tease, actually get a full, you know, a few, you know, scenes with him. But that didn't happen. But the short amount of time that we got him, I mean, you really can't really read much into that. You know, he had like two lines.
Kidneys! How can you kidneys? I don't like the color.
Of your kidneys? What's happening?
We're probably crashing. Oh!
It's a war!
Stay calm. Just one question. Do you happen to know how to fly this thing?
And the kidneys thing, I didn't really get. Like, I don't if that is that a reference to something like that I'm not aware of. That one I didn't understand. I guess they're kind of trying to parallel when Smith first regenerated and he was like, you know, legs and whatever, saying the different parts of his body. Maybe they're just trying to be goofy with it. And then do you know how to fly this thing? I actually thought that was funny. I laughed at that.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? You laughed at that?
I know, of all things. I thought it was kind of funny to think that the doctor doesn't remember, you know, how, because it makes sense. Every time the doctor has ever regenerated, he's always had that period of time where he kind of doesn't really know what's going on, or he's trying to get to know himself or who he is. And so to me, it was kind of like, okay, he doesn't know how to fly the TARDIS. Obviously, he's going to remember later on how to fly the TARDIS, but at this moment, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
The other thing that struck me is just how old he looked.
Yep.
Just, he's so old. And that's, I have my concerns with that, with the fandom of Doctor Who and what has created that fandom. And we were talking a little bit about this before we started recording tonight, but a large portion of Doctor Who's fan base, especially in the United States, has come with Matt Smith.
Right. And honestly, no matter what other fans of Doctor Who might say, who say, if your only experience is Matt Smith, then you're not a true fan. Well, that's the vast majority of the fans in the States right now. Matt right. Smith is their doctor. That's their only doctor. They listen to us talk about Eccleston and Tennant, and I think that I know who the doctor is, but then you have other fans who know Hartnell, and the list goes on. That's Matt Smith is everybody's doctor right now.
And this is an interesting move because of the fact that he's an older actor, very old. I think he's actually older than Hartnell was when he first started playing. So I think he's like the oldest actor to play the doctor.
Wow.
I could be wrong in that, so don't quote me, but I think that's what's the case.
Don't quote me as we're recording this.
Well, that's for our listeners that are going, no, actually. And so then that way I have my out there. I don't know if I'm 100% sure about that, but I think that's the case, that he is the oldest actor to play the doctor. And he's, you know, he's somewhat well known, but I don't know about you, Adam. When they first announced Peter Capaldi as the doctor, I was like, who?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm not, you know, I think if you're familiar with British television, and a lot of people obviously who watched, you know, a lot of people that are from the UK are probably very familiar with his work, but I would say most American viewers have no idea who he is. He doesn't mean anything to them. It's not like John Hurt, you know, he means something to American viewers. And so when they announced him that he was going to be in the 50th, it was like, oh, wow, John Hurt. But I don't think we have that same reaction with Peter Capaldi.
No.
So I don't think they're going to get the viewership just based on name recognition. And the fact that he's so much older than Smith, and people are so used to Smith as the doctor. And even if you – okay, let's say you're a fan, and I know fans like this that started watching with Smith. And then they really loved the show, and then they said, oh, I want to go back and watch other stuff. So they went back and watched Tennant as well. So their only experience with the Doctor is, you know, these younger guys playing the Doctor. And a lot of the, you know, a lot of fans kind of fell in love with that idea of the Doctor. I know a lot of, you know, female fans that are, you know, that love the show because, you know, they adore these male actors that are playing the Doctor. So to kind of take it to this older actor that isn't going to have that same sex appeal, it could be a little bit risky.
I'm saying right now that I'm trying not to base it off of the 3 seconds we had with Capaldi. I'm concerned. I really am. That's unless his first, he needs to come out of the gates in his first episode, whenever that might be, whatever it might be. Moffat has to have something major in store for him. Because I'm afraid that if that first episode falls flat, Doctor Who might be, I don't know, it's going to be interesting. I'm going to stick with it, but it's one of those things where it's like, it's going to have to be on par with the 50th, because Capaldi is so unknown. And like you mentioned, he's definitely an older character. He is definitely a goofier looking person, not trying to be mean or anything, but he just doesn't grab you. Let's say it that way. You don't look at the guy and think, oh, wow, this is someone I'm going to enjoy watching. I looked at him in the 5 seconds that he was on there, and the comments he made about the kidneys, something just seemed off. I wasn't sure what. Maybe it's just because he just went through a regeneration. Maybe it's his first time trying to be the doctor, but it just didn't seem right. So I'm kind of worried, but I'll be interested to see what happens.
Yeah, and for anyone that's listening right now that's like yelling at their iPhone or whatever, saying, oh, you guys are being so shallow. It doesn't matter what he looks like. I'm not saying this for my own personal sake. I'm saying this because I've actually talked to fans, people that I was watching the episode with when he changed into Capaldi, you know, younger female viewers who were very disappointed by the loss of Smith, because, you know, as shallow as it sounds, because they lost the cute doctor that they enjoyed watching every week. And I think that we might see a male companion in the future of the doctor, to kind of fill that gap. It's something that the older, you know, doctors did back in the classic series, where you had some of these older actors playing the doctor, but their companions were young male, you know, young male and young female. And I think we might see kind of a more young, good looking type male companion in his future, just to kind of fill that gap now that they've gotten rid of Smith.
I'm going to throw this out there that I'm saying it for myself. That's,
oh, really?
Yes, don't take it that way. Looking at Capaldi, like, I could take John Hurt. Looking at John Hurt and how they kind of put John Hurt forward, there was something very interesting about that character. There was something very interesting about how he presented the character. Smith, there's something interesting about how he portrays the character. Even some of the older doctors, the way that they put them forward, there's definitely something that intrigues you about that character. There's, looking at everything about Capaldi, there's something about him that I just find him very run of the mill. He doesn't strike me as the doctor. Every doctor has had a distinct look to the doctor. They've had their own personality. Capaldi, for one reason or another, I look at him and I see the very absence of personality. I don't see that there's, and maybe there is. And honestly, if you have watched anything with him and you know more than I do about who he is, I've heard descriptions of what he is as an actor. I haven't ever watched him personally, but I just have a very hard time looking at him and thinking, wow, I'm going to be drawn into this character. John Hurt, once again, he wasn't young, but even just for the 50th anniversary episode, for the time that he was, I was drawn into him. He wasn't goofy. He didn't have major facial expressions, but I was drawn into his character and I was interested to see what was going to happen. Capaldi, I don't know. He just is lacking something for me.
Could you have watched a whole series with Hurt as the doctor, though, without, because I mean, he had Smith and Tennant there with him to play off of. If it was just Hurt in that whole episode, would you have been as accepting of him?
I think I would have. I am willing to go on record and say that I love what John Hurt did with the doctor. I think what he did was very special. Now, you'd definitely have to write the character completely differently than what you wrote for Tennant or Smith or even Eccleston. And maybe they're going to completely flip everything on its head for Capaldi, which I hope they do, because I think they need to. But there was just something about that grizzled veteran looking, wise, knowledgeable doctor that if you paired him with the right companion or you put him in the right circumstances, I could have watched an entire season of John Hurt. Capaldi, I don't know. He just seems very flat to me, and it might just because I've only seen him for 5 seconds, but I'm somewhat worried. If they try to do what they did with Smith with Capaldi, I don't think it's going to work.
I think we're going to get a very different version of the doctor, and I'm not writing Capaldi off yet. I think that fans that have been with the show for a long time, people that have watched some of the classic stuff and watched, you know, all of the new stuff as well, are probably a little bit more excited for Capaldi than just fans who have just jumped on the bandwagon within the past, you know, couple seasons with Smith. It'll be less of a shock to our systems than it would be to kind of the newer fans. So I'm excited to see what he does. It's definitely a change, but I'm ready for a change. I as much as I like Smith, there was things about his version of the Doctor that I really didn't like. And so I'm ready for something different.
And this is where I'm going to backtrack after watching the farewell to Matt Smith and kind of just thinking back on Matt Smith. I might want more. I don't know if I'm ready for this. I found myself saying the exact same thing with Tennant, though. Not that I was waiting for Tennant to go on, but it's something different when you come to the end of a doctor and you just kind of think that that is the last time we will see that doctor. Kind of sad.
Well, I really am kind of sad. If nothing else with the old man makeup, what Moffat accomplished is now he has the ability to bring Matt Smith back, even if Matt Smith is 30 years older, 40 years older. He can bring him back at any time for a special because now we have seen him aged up, you know, to as old as you can possibly get, basically. So there will never be a time where Matt Smith is too old to come back and reprise his role as the Doctor.
Nice. Well done. So, we'll never have those same conversations that we had about Tennant.
Yeah, he's accomplished that at least. So, well, I think we have spent enough time debating over the Christmas special. You know, overall, I was pretty negative about specific elements of the episode. After watching it a second time, I definitely appreciated it more. And I think coming back to this one in the future, I will probably be even less critical of it. I know I've done that with other episodes of Doctor Who that I just could not stand the first time I watched them. And then now that I've watched them numerous times, that, you know, I love those episodes. So I think, you know, I tend to be typically overly critical the first time I watch a Doctor Who episode. This one had elements that really bothered me, but overall, as a story, I accepted it much more, and especially at the very end, the end portion when he says goodbye to Clara and Amy. By the end of it, I was like, okay, I don't hate this anymore. So I'm gonna look back and try to remember all the positive things about it as opposed to the negative things as I look forward to the future of the show.
I would say that I was more forgiving towards those bad elements just because I felt like when all was said and done, I got to say goodbye to my doctor. And honestly, I felt like the doctor got to say goodbye to me. I still look at those last few moments kind of like how, what is that? Is that breaking the fourth wall? Is that what they call it when acting in TV shows where they actually act to the audience as opposed to just acting as their character?
Yeah.
I forget what they call that. But
I think you're right.
I feel like that's what they did for both Tennant and Smith, where when Tennant looks at the camera and says, I don't want to go, he was telling us that he didn't want to go. And I feel like when Smith says that he will always remember when the doctor was me, I think he was talking to us. I'm very pleased with how they ended up. Might not have been the best episode. Definitely don't think it was the worst episode, but I was happy with kind of those last couple minutes of Matt Smith's tenure as the doctor.
All right. Well, were there any other individual elements of the episode that we did not cover, Adam, that you wanted to bring up or talk about before we sign off?
I wanted to bring up the runaway bride that you mentioned early on as they are panning through the doctor's little room in the bottom of the church. There's a picture that shows up on the wall that one of the kids drew, and it's the picture of that spider woman from the Runaway Bride.
I did notice that.
Doctor. So I thought that was interesting that they kind of threw that in there. Let's see here. They anti-gravs on the toy train. The doctor made a train, and with the wheels, he added anti-grav to it so that it now floated, confused the kid because they had no idea what he was talking about. The doctor invented the dance called the drunk giraffe. Don't be cool because being cool is not cool. He fixed a leak in the barn, which the barn is now bigger on the inside, which kind of confused me. I didn't know how he made the barn bigger on the inside than it was on the outside. I thought that was only a TARDIS that was able to do that.
Time Lord science.
That what you mentioned as far as handles, the thank you handles, well done, mate. Very sad part of the entire show. And finally, we know that the silence were genetically engineered confessional priests made to have people forget anything that they would have told you after you confessed to them by the papal mainframe. And with that, I think that covers everything else that I thought was interesting. There were some great one-liners throughout it, but I'm pretty sure that is, well, you mentioned it, I'll just say it again, the line when the doctor, when he tells Clara to stay here, I'll be protecting you, one last victory, give me that, allow me that, my impossible girl. I thought that was a very special interchange, one of those emotional moments that I think I consider the high points of the episode.
Would have been more emotional if he didn't have all that makeup on.
Oh, come on. Give it a rest.
And on that note, Thanks for listening to this episode of Bad Wolf Radio. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that by going to @BadWolfPodcast. Definitely looking for more Twitter followers. We have a lot of Facebook likes, but our Twitter account isn't as, I guess, popular, you could say. So we definitely want to get more followers over on Twitter. So if you're listening to this episode and you're not following us on Twitter yet, go ahead. We're Bad Wolf Podcast, not Bad Wolf Radio. If you're following Bad Wolf Radio on Twitter, you're following the wrong account. Our account is Bad Wolf Podcast. Also, if you want to ever send us an email with any feedback about what we talked about in the episode, if you agree with me, if you agree with Adam, if you don't agree with either of us, send us an email, tell us your thoughts. We may even read it on the next episode and discuss what you sent us. The email address is badwolfpodcast@gmail.com.
And you can always find us on the Facebook page, Bad Wolf Radio. Go ahead, jump in there, interact with us. Great to see questions pop up. Great to see comments thrown in there to the different posts. Definitely always cool to see everybody showing up there.
And on our next episode, we will be, I believe, going back and starting to review the classic Doctor episodes. So we will be going through Netflix catalog of classic Doctor episodes and watching them together. I know Adam has yet to really dive into the classic era, so this will be kind of a cool experiment introducing Adam to a lot of the classic Doctor stuff as we go through and review it as well. So we will be starting that with our next episode, probably within the next couple weeks.
Definitely take a look. If you have Netflix, jump in there, watch it along with us. It should be good. It's going to be interesting, if nothing else.
Yeah, the first few are definitely rough, so this should be fun. But thanks again for listening, and everybody have a great holiday.
Later days.